different story. This matches the classic case of 7-Up described in positioning, selling the un-cola to people who didn't want to buy Coke, but it goes far deeper than that. I'm asking you to invent an entirely new story that's framed around the worldview of an underserved community. The WNBA did a pretty good job of this with women's basketball. I don't think their ultimate failure makes the case study less interesting. They failed because the big television money sports teams depend on never materialized. Instead of saying, "Hey, basketball fans, this is just like men's basketball, but the tickets are cheaper," the WNBA went to a new group, families and women and kids, and offered a fundamentally different story with a changed standard for interactions between players and fans and a game experience that was contrary to the NBA's. Is it guaranteed that you'll find a new community that will embrace you and make your success certain? Certainly not. But it's also certain that addressing the community of your dominant competitor is going to fail. Splitting the community. What if you're entering a market where there is already successful competition and they've all bought your competition's story? That means that your competition is already telling a story that's working. In order to grow, you can't tell the same story to the same people, even if you tell it louder or with more style. Instead, you will find success by telling a different story to part of the community with a particular worldview that's different from that of the masses. For example, Masa, the $300 per person sushi restaurant in New York, went to people who liked eating out and people who loved sushi and told them a different story. This is the best sushi in the world, but only for people who are willing to pay for it. Until the moment Masa showed up, there was a community of people who wanted to hear a story framed around sushi. This is a convenient sushi, or a great sushi, or a good value in sushi. This group was treated as a homogenous group, sharing just one worldview. We like sushi. Masa told a story to only part of that community. He told a story to people who, in addition to the I like sushi worldview, wanted to hear a story framed around the deluxe and best in the world worldview. Some people in the I love sushi community heard this story and believed it. It was framed with their worldview about food as well as their self-esteem and feelings about spending money. Other people said, "That's ridiculous." So by splitting the sushi worldview into two groups, the big group that believes sushi couldn't be worth that kind of money, and the smaller group that was willing and able to believe the story, Masa was able to peel off enough people to create a success. The restaurant will become a profitable institution only if the experience they promised is actually delivered, and remarkable enough that this new community starts bringing their friends. While the worldview you are looking at may appear monolithic, it almost certainly is not. When the Fortune 500 started hiring vice presidents to spend their billions of dollars on information technology, it appeared that all 500 of these CIOs had the same worldview. Pretty soon, though, alert competitors discovered that some of them wanted to hear stories about avoiding risk, while others desperately wanted to make a name for themselves by appearing to be risk-taking mavericks. Companies like Broadview and IBM and Cisco carved up the market by working hard to discover who would believe which story. The other way to grow. What if splitting the community doesn't get you a big enough share of the market? The other way to grow is to recognize that in every community, people have more than one worldview at a time. Many people who spend good money on bicycles, for example, respond to stories framed around going fast. For a long time, this worldview was the core of the bike market. Italian companies like Campagnolo and some Japanese upstarts obsessed about telling an ever better story about speed. Then, a number of American companies like Trek started telling a different story to the same audience. It was a story about comfort. The comfort story Trek told persuaded people to spend $1,000 or $5,000 on a mountain bike or a hybrid bike that had a racing heritage. Trek was the original sponsor of Lance Armstrong, but was actually a pleasure to ride. It wasn't until 1990, 14 years after they started selling racing bikes, that Trek took off. They did it by focusing on telling a story to the underserved worldview in the community of bike buyers. Today, most of the successful companies in this market succeed by selling comfortable bikes to aging baby boomers. As bikers aged, their worldview changed, and so did the successful stories. By relying on a story that was easier to tell and easier to take action on, they activated more people in the market.